Hello and welcome to another InventRight.com radio show. I'm InventRight co-founder Andrew Krause. I'll be hosting today's InventRight show, where we always give you great advice on bringing new products to market. Today, our guest is industrial design and engineering expert, CEO Steve Samuel from DesignViz.com and UGizmos.com. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show. You seem like a very, very knowledgeable person. I met with you once in person when it comes to industrial design and engineering. And so we're going to jump right in. That leads me to my first question for you. You know, at InventRight, we're always telling our students that their patent attorney is only as good as the information that you give them. Do you believe that's the same thing to be true when it comes to working with an industrial designer or an engineer?
Yes, I think it's very important to get the right folks to help you. Obviously, if you give a patent attorney the wrong information, bad sketches, too little information, they're going to fill in and do the kinds of things that really won't work for you, and they won't get it right. It's really important that you give them the best idea. Hopefully, you've got hand sketches, CAD models, things of this nature to make them understand what the idea is right away. Now, that said, a good attorney will think of things that you didn't think of in terms of protecting your idea. So it's important to work with someone who's creative. But obviously, it's very important to give these folks a great representation of what your idea is right off the bat.
So what I hear you saying is the inventor should do their job on the inventing side, but there is things that experts like a patent attorney or, in your case, an industrial designer or engineer can bring to the table.
Yes. It's very easy for inventive folks who have a wonderful idea to work, in a sense, in a vacuum. And, you know, you're inventing and you're excited and you've got this idea. And the emotions sometimes can get the better of us all. So if we have the right patent attorney and we give that patent attorney a really good representation of what the idea is, a good patent attorney will be able to look at it objectively, compare it to things that have already been done, compare it to things that have been done that may be conflicting or even similar, and kind of fill in where the inventor may not have the expertise.
So you're an industrial design and engineering expert. Can you give us some examples of that, things like that have happened to you before, where the inventor is coming to you and they're maybe relying too heavily on you for certain things? Because the one thing the inventor is supposed to do is be creative, come up with a new idea, and try to explain to the best of their ability what it is they're trying to accomplish. Do you believe that inventors sometimes can get themselves into trouble if they don't fully, if they put too much, rely too heavily on the expert as far as the creativity side of things? Or,
well, it's funny. I haven't seen that as much as I've seen almost the opposite. So let me give you a really interesting example. I was working with an inventor who had a system for aligning bones in the human body. And it was really interesting. This person was from a different country and had a very poor command of the English language. So when he explained the design to me, I really didn't understand him well. So we started communicating with these hand sketches. So when I created a hand sketch of what I thought he was presenting to me, he looked at it and he says, "Oh, I never thought of that. That's even better." And broke it. So that was a really interesting thing. But it really speaks volumes of the fact that in the end, communication of an invention or an idea is incredibly important. And if you have the right people that you're communicating with, they'll not only understand what you're trying to get at, but they may even help you to get to something even better.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, but now every industrial designer and engineer isn't necessarily as creative as you are. So I guess it depends. Do you have any advice on how do you identify the right people that need to help you out with your project? So you are very creative. Some engineer types, it very black and white. You know, oh, you want it this big, or okay, we're going to have to design it like this in order to accomplish your goal. What advice do you have for people with regards to finding the right industrial designer or engineer for them? And also, you might want to describe what an industrial designer is. Some people listening may not know.
Okay, now that's wonderful. Industrial design, in general, is the art and the science of designing something that will be appealing in ways that are above and beyond engineering. So there's a really broad definition. Industrial design can be this beautiful hand sketch, or it can be just a photoshopped rendering, or it can be it could even be like a CAD model or a list of how things will work and how things will interface with their users. So industrial design is really broad. It's artsy. It requires a lot of feeling, emotion, imagination, and many, many things that you can't always put numerical values on. Mm-hmm. So that's industrial. And industrial design is usually the first phase of a product design. So we get to industrial design, and hopefully you really get it right. The next phase of a project is usually then what we call product design. You take an industrial design and you make it real. You figure out, you know, how this thing is going to be manufactured. What are the wall thicknesses? What is it going to be, plastic? What, you know, what material it's going to be made of? You know, how much is it going to weigh? All of those kind of more hard or more mathematically and scientifically stringent things are, you know, what comes next after the industrial design. And in order to choose good people, it's very difficult. Of course, it's always great to look at a resume, a portfolio, get examples of what these folks have done in the past, talk to, you know, get their references, talk to people who have dealt with them. But in the end, I'll say it comes back to communication. You know, it's if you can ask the right questions of these folks, if you can really communicate with them and know that they're going to be able to hear what you're saying and to really listen well to you, that's almost more important than their skill level. It's so interesting that as scientific as we get and as complex as things get, in many cases, success comes with some of the simplest things, like communication ability. You know, can you look in the person's eyes and say, you know, this is what I had in mind, and have them really hear you? These are the people that you want to work with, almost and almost to a more important degree than if they're, you know, technically good.
Well, that's why I brought that first question up, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. You get two technical people or a creative person and a technical person together, and sometimes there's a serious lack of communication. Inventors sometimes aren't the best at communicating what is in their head, and sometimes engineers are a little too on the technical side and not that good at understanding things that aren't numerical, as you're saying.
There really is this classical almost feud between industrial designers and product designers, and it's funny that the two don't seem to understand each other's point of view. And now here I would really say something that may be radical. It seems to me that a good industrial designer is a person who really has spend some time being an engineering product designer kind of person, and vice versa. It's always really, really good when you get some cross-pollination. And when an industrial designer designs something that can't be manufactured, that's really not a very good thing. And when an engineer, a product design engineer, takes industrial design and tries to dumb it down in a way that's more easily manufactured, it's not always a good outcome either.
It's not always appealing. It doesn't look pretty. It's not the next iPod maybe, or iPhone.
And so, exactly. And so the product won't sell, and then nobody's served.
Right, right. Well, now are these... So how often is this person all rolled into one, industrial design and engineering? Or is it usually different people at different firms, different people at the same firm? Do you need to work with multiple people? Can you get this all in one person or just all in one company? What's your...
That's a great question. It's very rare that you have one person that can do it all. In many, many cases, in the larger companies that we work with, talk about the GMs and the Bose and companies of this nature, Plantronics, all of these extremely successful companies. In many cases, there's separate groups that do this work. Now, in some of the smaller design firms, you get people that have been forced to do both jobs. Mm. And I feel that that's a huge benefit. But like I said, it takes a different kind of a person who can do it all. If you can find someone who is a good industrial designer, a good product designer /engineer, and a good communicator all in one person, that's a rare find.
Well, that last one's very interesting, the good communicator. That's something I've never heard anybody bring up before, and I think it's an incredible point. So talking about all these different people that need to help you with your project on more complicated projects sometimes, it sounds like it might get a little on the expensive side. How can inventors save money when working with an engineer or an industrial designer, or it sounds like you need to work with both?
That's another wonderful question, and one that truly is extremely important. The number one thing I've got to start with is you have to front load your projects. In other words, if you really give your project or your product a lot of thought up front, it will save you iteration upon iteration in the end. So every time you iterate upon a product idea or a product definition, it's a huge cost. So a lot of companies focus on getting things right the first time, which in many cases means prototyping early. So I'm talking very general. Now let me get a little specific. Let me give a specific example. Suppose you want to produce a device that helps you strum a guitar, let's say. You've got this need for paraplegics or something like this, I'm just kind of pulling this out of my head. So you have this idea of what the device is, and you can jump right into the heavy, mechanical design and make all these CAD models and get these stereolithography prototypes and so on and so forth, and you can really go very, very far down the road of this design before you come to understand that, for some very, very good reason, it won't work. That's the bad thing to do. The good thing to do is to take some cardboard, take an old piece of plastic tubing and fashion something that will kind of work first. Now you've spent very little, but you've got a lot of answers up front. Now, if I relate that to the kind of people that you should work with that will save you money, the kind of people that will save you money are the people who understand this very well and who understand that when you do an industrial design, it's got to be something that is manufacturable, not just pretty. And when you do an industrial design, it's something that should be the result of many hand sketches and little cardboard prototypes and things of this nature before you invest a lot of time in doing the more stringent and difficult CAD work. See, as an industrial designer, you can be asked just to provide hand sketches or beautiful renderings or even go all the way and work in programs like Rhino or Alias and these very detailed computer-aided design surfaces. But that's very expensive, and you can accomplish a lot with a lot less. So when I say that you should front load the whole process, you should do a lot of thinking up front. What I'm really saying is, for very little money, you can get a lot of answers that will lead you into a much better and much more well-defined product in the end, and you'll save yourself from all of these design iterations. So people who understand that are what you really need to find. Anybody who says, you know, here's your idea, I'm going to jump right onto the CAD and give it to you, that's probably the person that you want to shy away from.
Well, and sometimes it's the fault of the service provider. Sometimes it's the fault of the inventor. On a lot of times, inventors they don't want to find out that it may not work, so they want to feel like they're moving forward. But like you said, that can get you into a lot of trouble because it can end up costing you a lot of money. Whereas if you did your research, how did you put it? You did it. I'll front load the research.
You front load the research. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that's very smart. I think that's incredible advice. And unfortunately, a lot of inventors don't do that. They get a false sense of moving forward by sometimes just spending money. You know, oh, I got this guy, he's working on that. But they didn't really think through the research and anticipate some problems. And it would seem like if they're interfacing with an industrial designer or engineer, you could have a discussion. If they're sometimes industrial designers and engineers, like you said, and inventors are not good communicators. But if you're communicating well and you can have a verbal discussion with somebody and work out the kinks before you actually get involved in hundreds or thousands of dollars of work, that you're both the inventor is going to be happy and the industrial designer is going to be happy or the engineer, because they don't want to deliver something that the client isn't happy with. At least not a good provider wouldn't.
You really hit the nail on the head. And I've got to share a story with you. One time we get calls all the time from people who want us to help them bring their you know, beautiful ideas to market. Great. It's fantastic. We love it. But every now and then we will get a request from a inventor for a product that we absolutely know won't be beneficial. And sometimes it's very, very difficult to convince folks of this. Now, without giving the details, recently, like within the last 3 months, we were asked to build something that was absolutely technically impossible. And when we tried to convince the person, the prospective customer, that this was impossible, they said, "I think it's possible because I actually saw it in a movie." Well, that movie happened to be a science fiction movie. And we looked at each other, just dumbfounded. And, you know, of course, we're supposed to serve. That's our job, is to serve, you know, our customers. And when we have to give the customers the bad news, it puts us in a very, very strange emotional spot. You know, we don't want to burst the person's bubble, but the last thing we want to do is take their money and spend months and months and months designing something and building a prototype, only to find that, you know, for some very, very well-defined engineering reasons, this is not possible.
Well, I think that's really incredible. I think it's an incredible story, and what I'm getting out of that is that on the inventor side of things, they need to be very upfront when working with an industrial designer or engineer, saying, "Hey, look, I want you to tell me the real story." And so when you start to give the service provider you're working with the impression that you don't want to hear about problems, you don't want to hear that things won't work, it makes it very difficult for them to do their job.
Exactly. And that's when you can just lose a lot of money by someone just going down this road and doing all this, you know, this CAD work and, you know, all these calculations, and you can burn through literally tens of thousands of dollars just because you wouldn't listen to the folks who really know.
Yeah. Well, Steve, we need to wrap things up, but before we do, you've started a new business in addition to the industrial design and engineering services you offer at Design Viz It's DESIGNVIZ.com. But you have a new website. It's kind of a social networking site. Can you tell us about your new website, YouGizmos, YouGizmos.com?
MOS.com. Yeah, YouGizmos.com. We're very, very excited about it. It's basically a portal to creativity. We are part of a community that absolutely loves to build things. And we're part of a community that, you know, we think about this stuff, and it's more than just working and customers and business. It's what we love to do. So we are sharing all sorts of things that we've created and everybody else has created with each other. And, you know, the kind of folks that we're involved in, it's a family, and we love to share, and we love to see each other's work. And you're even able to, create designs and plans that you can sell to the entire world through YouGizmos.com. So it's been a wonderful ride. We've met a lot of people. As a matter of fact, this week we're going to go to the Maker Faire, which is supposed to have about 80,000 people attending. And we're going to have a booth there at the Maker Faire, and we're going to be dealing with these wonderfully creative people. So it's really a great privilege, and it's been a fun ride thus far.
Well, what's really unique about your site, you know, people can post videos and things that, you know, there are some other sites doing that, but one very unique thing about your site is that people can actually sell plans for their inventions. And I know it's kind of a side thing for your site, but it kind of caught my attention, and I thought that was cool, because sometimes people come up with an invention that they're not really planning on licensing or venturing, but it's something cool. They'd like to make a few bucks, and they can sell the video or, I guess, instructions on how to make something. Is that how it works on your site?
That's precisely right. You know, not everything was meant to be this huge product that's on the shelves of Walmart or Target or whatever. You know, there's inventors who, you know, create a machine that, plays music through their piano or something that is just this fantastically elegant design that they've spent a lot of time on. And we believe that folks like this, you know, should be compensated. You know, you should be able to sell your work without having to necessarily go through the normal channels and make these big deals and have all this inventory and stuff like that. So it's really democratizing the ability for people to do this work, and we really believe in it. And we believe strongly that creativity in many ways is the solution to a lot of the problems that we have these days, and that creative folks in a very real sense are kind of a blessed group.
Well, I'll end it on that note. I think that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Steve, for being a guest on our show. It's been fantastic.
Well, thank you. It's quite a privilege, and thanks so much for furthering the community and creativity in general.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to help educate our listeners and inventors. So that wraps it up for another InventRight radio show. Make sure to check out our site at www.inventright.com, R-I-G-H-T, to get access to a whole bunch of free stuff like our forum, Stephen's blog where he offers advice three times a week, our resource center, and our free manufacturers database for a list of manufacturers open to receiving ideas, plus our new Get in the News page where you can get your 15 minutes of fame as an inventor. An inventor that it was on our Get in Our News page just got an article in the LA Times just 2 days ago from being on our website. That's all free at InventRight.com. And last but not least, the InventRight course that teaches you step-by-step how to sell your ideas and provides a year, yes, a year, of unlimited mentoring and phone support. Take care, everyone, and keep inventing.